What I'm going to share today is just what has unfolded in my life, especially over the last 2 years. There's going to be some diving into history as well. But this story I'm sharing with you, it was mentioned earlier, the onward and upward. And that was a word I gave a couple years ago. And for those of you who are new here or haven't been here when I said it, I was referring to the C.S. Lewis Narnia Chronicles book, The Last Battle, where at the very end, when they basically go through the gate to the true Narnia, as Len was calling them, onward and upward. And they would stop and just see how beautiful everything is. And Aslan kept saying, no, don't stop here. Onward and upward. And they kept going further. They would go further and they'd stop. And it was even more grand, more beautiful than their previous stop. So my story, it's kind of unexpected how it came about. But this is an onward and upward story. I believe it also ties into the theme of this year from Isaiah 60, verse 1, arise, shine, for your light has come, and the glory of the Lord has risen upon you. As most of you saw, I do play on the worship team. Now, my history with music actually goes back to my grandmother, my mom's mom, who, when we went for a visit, she would play the piano when I went to bed. Just play for me. And then I just happened to one day when I was there, I opened up the piano bench and saw a beginner book, and I took it out and started going through that. I believe it was my grandmother and my parents recognized, hey, there's something there. And in spite of my dad being at University of Toronto doing his PhD, which means not a whole lot of income, they put me through piano lessons. To try and cut things short, I did get grade 9 Royal Conservatory. Grade 10 was extremely hard, and at that particular time, I was in grade 13 in school. That was hard as well. So it's like something had to give. I stopped piano lessons, but kept up the music. In some way or form, did some what I would consider today rudimentary composing. So I was interested in writing music at that time. So music has been a foundational part of my life for a long time. I didn't really have any dreams, I would say, of performing. I hated performing. I hated recitals. I have a tendency to have this perfectionist thing about me. And so when I knew I wasn't perfect, I just didn't want to display it. As you can tell, I'm over that pretty much. Because believe me, I make a lot of mistakes up there. There was music in me, because I've been in Vineyard for quite a long time. There was early on this dissatisfaction because my job was shift work, 3 days on, 3 days off, which means if I could play on the Sunday, I couldn't be at the rehearsal or vice versa. It's just the way the timing worked out. So basically playing keys was sidelined. When early Vineyard, early in our history, Bruce and Dan would decide to do an album, they didn't include me, which stung, because I did go to Fanshawe College for music industry arts in the production side of things, so it's like I was eager to contribute in that way, but whatever reason it was, could have been as simple as too many cooks spoil the broth. I wasn't included, and that was a painful moment. In the meantime, I was going, what do I write about? And God planted in me this desire to, well, start at the beginning. What do you mean? Write in Genesis. And so I started the process of writing an instrumental album, which is an instrumental interpretation of the creation story. It took 17 years to make just because of I had a job, I have a young family. I tell all of this because of how my depression started. I was let go from one particular job, which I considered a blessing because I was nearly done this album. Let me focus on that. Finished the album, excited to release it. The money I made on it basically covered the expenses that I had, and that was it. Didn't really go any farther in spite of every effort I could think of and what I read about to promote it. So in some ways, that was a letdown. the album itself was nominated for a Covenant Award for Instrumental Album. Didn't win, but yeah, I got the nomination. So it was like, hey, that's pretty good. First attempt at an album, and I'm up there already. And being at the Covenant Awards led me to put a disc in the hands of, and now I've forgotten his name, but he worked at Crossroads Communications, the people who basically started off his 100 Hundley Street, so that whole TV station thing, and said, you know, people have said my music sounds like movie soundtrack, and that's something I'm interested in. Have a listen, and if long story short, I did do something for them. I also did a few 10 or 15 tracks for Bruce Ellis when he was working for a particular company, Chorus, I think he was working for it. And so I did that for a particular program that he was working on. And the one I did for Crossroads, which I did co-composing with another composer, that got nominated for Canadian Screen Award. Didn't win. And it was around that time I was sort of, hey, I've got my foot in the door, right? The door opened, and then there was nothing for quite a while. And then got a call from Crossroads again. Hey, we got something coming up. Our regular composer isn't available. Can you do it? And I said, sure, I'm sure I'd love to do it. Tight deadline, really tight deadline. I worked on a particular track, submitted it. No, that's not quite right. Revised it, sent it. No, that's not quite right. And then eventually it was like, time crunch is pretty tight. Sorry, we can't continue like this. So basically got fired. Reflecting on that particular job and on that particular time, I do recognize now that was the beginning of the depression that I was experiencing. It was a struggle, actually, to do the work. It just felt like a fog in my head. And then the door shut. As much as that stung getting fired, I sort of tried to reassure myself, well, look, Howard Shore did Lord of the Rings, got an Academy Award, and then got fired a few years later doing King Kong. So, you know, even he can get fired. It's no big deal. I was trying to convince myself, but stung. It really stung. And I wasn't being honest with myself about that. If I've explained it to people before like this, got my foot in the door and someone slammed it on my foot. And, you know, months turned into years. I always forget. It's easily 10, 12 years, easily, probably a bit longer. My dad died before I released my album. And so there was probably a bit of low-grade depression relating to that. Part of sinking into this deep depression was obviously those who have gone through it, you start hearing the voices. I call them external. In a sense, it's like, well, obviously you're no good. Obviously, you don't have the talent. You're not good at this. And then it turned into, you're just not a good person. You're not a good husband. You're not a good father. You name it. Worthless. Unloved. Lack. Yeah. And so I had that going through my brain constantly and trying to fight through that. And in some sense, it paralyzed me. It's like I couldn't even go find a job because it's like, I'm useless. What's the point? And my poor wife had to take up the slack, get a job in order for us to feed our family, which as a man, as the provider, that was just another, I couldn't do it. It was a point where I just couldn't do it. I'm going to say one of the stepping stones to getting out of my depression was Janine had been working at a retirement home at the time, and a position opened up as maintenance. And I'm somewhat handy, so I could, she said, encourage me to, okay, just apply for this part-time. I went, okay. In some ways, enjoyed it. I enjoyed interacting, especially with the residents there and helping them figure out their cable TV. And it's interesting, the influence you have, because I was, this one particular woman, I was teaching how to fix it herself. And she related me a story a little later. I remember this one time it wasn't working, and then I just asked myself, what would Rob do? And so it's like, oh, that's cool. But there was also another moment where my boss had come in and I was explaining some of the work I'd been doing. And he just looked at me and said, where did you learn how to do this? And I said, well, I guess my dad taught me, because when we'd moved into Waterdown, he bought a house that needed a whole bunch of fixing up. And I occasionally helped him out with that. And when we built our house, I helped with the construction of that. I did a whole bunch of work on there. So just him asking that question, it's like, oh, I do have some kind of value. And that was sort of a little nugget in my head that just went, oh, I'm not useless. I'm not worthless. It was a voice that it stayed, but the beating voices, the loud other voices were still present. At some point, maybe a couple years ago, because of the depression, I wasn't able to do any writing. I'd sit at the computer and nothing would come. One thing I skipped over is that through a school program when I was in Toronto, and from grade 4 to grade 8, they offered a string program. So I picked up the violin at that point, dropped it after grade 8 because high school didn't offer strings. So I decided a couple years ago, I think I'd like to pick up the violin again, just to get something musical to go for. So I started lessons in, I guess, February of 2024. And then a little bit later, something Jeff had said got me thinking about worship. And I forgot to tell this part of the story. Janine and I had filled in for worship leading, which I kind of dreaded, because I guess it was those external voices that were telling me, I'm not that great a singer. I'm not that great a guitar player. I hadn't touched a guitar in 20-odd years. But for her, I'll support her. And she did most of the leading, I think. I may have sung backup or something like that at that time. So Jeff said something to me that got me thinking, I'm wondering if I should be doing this. And so approached Andy and Margaret Ellen, who are our current overseers of the worship community, and said, if you want, we can start helping lead. Because at the time, we were pretty short on leaders, if I remember correctly. And so I, in some ways, reluctant, but ultimately felt the prompting of the Holy Spirit to do this. First time we do it, from the moment we stepped into that, I just couldn't believe how powerful it was for you. I remember being incredulous. It's like, it's second song in, someone's crying over there. A joke with Janine after, oh, we were that bad, eh? Yeah, just seeing the impact it had. And I was going, what is this? What is going on? And I talked to God about it. I don't understand this. Because I, like I said to myself, I'm not that great a singer. I'm not that great a guitar player. What is it? And Scott Rowe, maybe your third time, took me aside and said, the favor of God is on you in this. I went, oh, that's what it is. I couldn't put words to it, but he did. And there were moments where afterward I'd, you know, be packing up my stuff and starting to cry and say, whatever is happening, I'm thankful for sure, but I just don't get it. Like, why me? One of the times I asked why me, he just said, just 'cause. It was a satisfactory answer for me at that time. And then I used to meet pretty regularly with Scott. Every 2 weeks we'd go out and have a coffee and just talk about life. So there was one point after this where I said to him, I think the depression's gone. And I was cautious to say it because you never know, right? Because it's kind of a wave thing. But here I am, 2 and a bit years from that, depression's gone. And just seeing God move powerfully through me. And then I just started hearing nuggets after nuggets of God showing me what I was going through. Tab had mentioned one time in one of her messages about Cain, from Cain and Abel, how his offering was rejected and his face fell downcast. And she said, that phrase means depression. And I thought, oh, I never thought of it that way. And then as I reflected on that, I began to see the parallels. My offering to God of this music, which he gave me in the form of composing for TV, composing for film, doing my own album type of thing, was rejected. That wasn't what he wanted from me. When I offered worship, that's what he wanted. That's what he wanted from me. Tab had also given us homework not too long ago to read Psalm 23. And it's like, yeah, we all know that one. And I happened to read it in the NIV. The Lord is my shepherd. I lack nothing. He makes me lie down in green pastures. He leads me beside quiet waters. He refreshes my soul. He guides me along the right paths for his name's sake. Even though I walk through the darkest valley, and I just stopped there. And I went, wait a minute. He just said, he guides me along the right paths for his name's sake. And all of a sudden I clued in. Sometimes the right paths for his name's sake is that I walk through the darkest valley. I read that, I started crying. Just knowing that God was with me through it all. Because there were moments in my depression where I wanted to just throw it all away. Throw away Christianity, throw away my relationships with all of you, with my family, and just walk away from it all. But what stopped me is, it's kind of like Peter said, it's like, where would I go? You have the words of eternal life. And I don't like where I'm going. I don't like where I am. But somehow, you're there. I burst into tears reading that. And then I continued and blubbered even more. I will fear no evil, for you are with me. Your rod and your staff, they comfort me. You prepare a table before me in the presence of my enemies. My enemies were those voices saying, no good, unloved, worthless. And here they are in silence, watching me eat at God's banquet. You anoint my head with oil. My cup overflows. Surely goodness and love will follow me all the days of my life, and I will dwell in the house of the Lord. I mentioned the why me before, and I still ask that question sometimes. Most recently, he revealed to me a particular psalm. When I see and consider your heavens, the work of your fingers, the moon and the stars which you have established. I mean, you just picture that. I mean, those of you who have seen where there's no light pollution, you look up in the night sky, it is just gorgeous. It's just awe-inspiring. What is man that you are mindful of him, and the son of earth-born man that you care for him? Yes, you've made him a little lower than God, and you've crowned him with glory and honor. And as we reflect on that, I mean, that was written maybe 3,000 years ago, roughly. And it's like the person who wrote that has had very similar experiences to what I have. I haven't even told you some of the good parts yet. But I share in common an experience someone from 3,000 years ago had. It's like, yeah, God is the same yesterday, today, and forever. About a year ago, early last summer, I think, my family and I went out to dinner to celebrate my second youngest son's birthday. He turned 21. And in the process of that, Jonathan, my eldest son, referred to me in a conversation as Rob, not Dad, Rob. Now, there's a bit of history behind that, but basically, I thought we were on the mend. But when I heard it again, it's, well, as you can imagine, it stung. And so the following few days, I would, especially driving to work, I'd be praying and asking God about that because it troubled me. It's like, I don't know how to fix this. And so on my way to work one day, I was reflecting on it, and all of a sudden, I had this question pop in my head, and it was, God, does it bother you that I don't call you Dad? And here's the thing. In my prayers, I could refer to him as Father. I mean, I was always amazed in our leadership when Tab would, and you've heard her, refer to God as Papa. And, you know, if you remember your scripture, Jesus talks about calling on God the Father as Abba. So like daddy, dad, it's more of an intimate relationship. And for me, it's like, I don't know if I can do that. It feels disrespectful. And not saying that Tab's disrespectful. It's just like, for me, it felt like that. That's my history behind that. And so now here I am with that question. Does it bother you that I don't call you dad? He didn't answer me. Following morning, I'm driving to work, reflecting on that question, and then I actually said this. Okay, I'll do it, but this feels really weird. And I just went, dad. Turned onto my street for work, and all of a sudden, it just, this overwhelming sense of his presence, of his delight, of his immense love for me. Parked the car and bawling my eyes out, and I'm going, get it together, you have to go into work. I reflect on what just happened during work, and then tears go, no, stop it, stop it, stop it. So I had encountered Dad. Oh, it was so amazing. It wasn't too long ago, and Brandon, you and your wife were speaking, you were leading us in something, and I just felt that love again. And then as I was driving home, I was going, hang on, that was Jesus. Once I had experienced Dad, and I know this is going to sound a little bit heretical, but it's like I almost didn't know what to do with Jesus because I had experience with Dad. But then I had this experience with Jesus. I got, that felt a lot like Dad. And it's like, of course, Jesus and the Father are one. You know, it went from here to here. More recent experience. Last time Janine and I led worship, that particular Wednesday, I did what I normally do when I come from work. I'll put in my earbuds, go have a half hour nap or so. I decided to put on a Michael W. Smith album I hadn't heard in ages. And get to one particular song where it repeats a line. His arms are open. His arms are open. And it repeats. And I just had the visual. And I just felt him pull me in. And I'd never done this before. My hands shot up and I said, Daddy. And just felt that love again. Of course, started bawling my eyes out. I get up from my nap, still teary-eyed and stuff. Go and sit down, and I'm playing a game on my iPad, sort of distracting myself, but he's still there. And then after it subsides a bit, I go, well, you know, there's a particular song, the song I Can Only Imagine. I'm thinking, that first verse, there's some timing issues. I should re-listen to that song again, just so I can get in my mind how the timing goes. Not even two lines in. Couldn't even get past the first verse. And I go, oh, I give up on this. Go make dinner. And I'm crying while making dinner. And ended up not crying at rehearsal. And I said to Jenny, hey, I made it through rehearsal without crying. And she said, you're saving it up for Sunday. And I went, I know. And sure enough, second song in, I started crying. And then the Monday and Tuesday, again, hear a particular song I hadn't heard in a while, and just something in the lyrics just grabbed me. But this time it felt different. The only thing I can describe it as, it's like falling in love. And I recognized I long loved God as a big brother, friend, as we should. My more recent experience is learning that he loves me like a dad. And then all of a sudden there's this lover element to it, and it's like Song of Solomon made sense. I find it difficult to express in language what the experience is like. I mean, that's the closest thing I can describe. Father, lover, brother. And it's relatable, but it's so much more. And so this is where I am right now. I'm discovering this idea of God as lover. And here's the thing. That type of intimacy God's calling me into, it's not just for me. And here's the paradox. There's nothing special about me, nothing special about you, except you are special. I am special. God made me that way. There's nothing about me, there's nothing about you that God should draw his attention to, but he does. His eyes are on you. His heart is towards you. It's like Christine shared, she was reading off a near-death experience where the person just felt the immense love of God. And the way they described it is like love that's specific for you and only you, to the exclusion of others. And that's an interesting way of describing it, because it's true, but it's for everyone. That's that paradox again. There are things God is calling me into that I would never have expected. But I remember thinking, I'm too old for this. And when I said that, immediately I heard from God, you don't talk like that. So none of you are too old for something new. It starts with an intimacy with him. So be listening for what God is calling you into. But most of all, just be with him. And he'll show you. Okay, I'm taking a risk. I'm going to sing a song. It's a Michael W. Smith song. One of the ones that has gripped my heart.
Just Jesus, Jesus, take me over now. All of me.
It's been an incredible adventure. It's been a privilege and honor to lead worship for you, to lead you into his presence. I pray for each and every one of you to experience God like you've never had before. Don't settle. Please don't settle. His heart for you is so intensely full of love. Open up to it. It's beautiful. You are worthy because God made you worthy. You don't have to earn it. You are all beloved sons and daughters of the Most High God.